invited him to try out his chai farm. I was still in high school, Val told me, in 1988. The teacher and my father went with me. Mr. Mack sat in the stands, and Dave Keefe pitched batting practice to me and hit some balls to me in the outfield. Then they all invited us up to Mr. Mack's office. When I saw the polished wood floor in the office, I started to take off my cleats. And Mr. Mack said, "Don't worry about it, leave them on." Mack offered to pay his way through Duke, but Elmer didn't want to go to Duke. He wanted to play ball. They didn't talk about money. Mack had a blank Williamsport contract, and he put it before Elmer's father, who signed it. And Mack, as the terminology was in those days, then desked it. He just put it in the drawer. According to league records, Mack sent the contract for 1939 to the league, followed by a notice optioning Valo to Federalsburg, Maryland. In the spring of 39, Mack arranged for him to play on semi-pro teams in the city and work out with the A's when they were home. Valo wanted to continue to play at his high school until he graduated. When he graduated, he was assigned to Federalsburg, where he hit .374. In 1940, he went to Wilmington, where he led the Interstate League, hitting .364. In the fall of 1940, he was called up by the A's, and he hit .348 in 8 games. Mack optioned him to Wilmington again in 41. He had another good year, came up to the A's, and batted .420 in 13 September games that year. Except for a few years in the Army, Elmer Valo remained with the Athletics as long as they were in Philadelphia and went with them to Kansas City in 1954. He then played for 7 other teams. His last at-bat was for the Phillies in 1961. He had thus played in 3 decades, the 40s, the 50s, and the 60s. The Athletics had brought him up at the end of the 39 season, but Valo had not gotten into a game then. Or did he? In 1939, Red Smith was a sports writer and a columnist for the Philadelphia Record. More than 30 years later, on December 26, 1972, Red Smith wrote a letter to book producer Jim Charlton, who was later a Sabre Publications director. This is what the letter said. On the last day of the 1939 season in Philadelphia, Elmer was a kid from the country who had been getting a look-see from the Athletics. Connie Mack sent him up as a pinch hitter, and he walked, getting no official time at bat. When the official scorer learned that Connie Mack had used the player who was not under contract, he left the player's name out of the official score, since he had no time at bat, in order that St. Cornelius would escape a possible fine. This piece of perfidy came to light only last October, when Elmer told me about it at the World Series. By the way, the official scorer who falsified the record in 1939 and forgot about it until last October was me, Red Smith, of the Philadelphia Record. 3 years later, at the 1975 World Series in Cincinnati, Smith, who was now with the New York Times, described Lefty Gomez springing some tall tales to a group around him, and then wrote this. In the group around Gomez was Elmer Valo, who can name, for example, 3 players who were active in the majors in four decades, the 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s. Ted Williams, Mickey Vernon, Early Wynn. There is another, he said now, but you can't prove it by the record books. In the last week of the 1939 season, Connie Mack had me in Philadelphia for a look. Just a kid from the country. Late in the last game of the year, he sent me in as a pinch hitter, and I walked. Afterward, the official scorer came and told me that Connie, without giving it a thought, had left himself open to a stiff fine for using a player who wasn't under contract. He said if it was all right with me, he was going to protect Connie by leaving me out of the official score, since I didn't have an official time at bat anyway. That's why the records say I didn't get into the majors until 1940. Fallow turned to me, Smith wrote. You were working in Philadelphia then, he said, and you ought to remember. You were the official scorer. About 10 years later, Red Smith was at a Sabre meeting in New York, and according to a Sabre member who was there, he told the story to those sitting around him with a few embellishments. Smith said it was the last doubleheader of the season, Fallow was sent in to pinch hit and walked, and a runner was put in for him. When Commissioner Landis heard about it, Smith said, he reprimanded Connie severely and said he'd be fined and suspended if it happened again. Smith also repeated the story in an interview with William C. Wallace of the New York Times. Is this story true? For all his well-deserved honors, Red Smith was not above spinning some original yarns. There are some problems with this one. The A's were on the road for the whole last week of the 39th season, except for a closing weekend series against Washington on Saturday, September 30th, and on Sunday. The Sunday doubleheader was rained out, making Saturday, September 30th, the only game that the A's played at home at the end of the 39th season. Another problem with the story is that Connie Mack did not manage that day. He had been sick for weeks, and his son Earl had been running the team all that time. What's more, the A's faced no fines or reprimands, even if Valo had been in the game. The rules gave a club 10 days to sign a player who had agreed to terms, and he could play in the meantime. Connie Mack had done that often in the years when he was routinely looking over young players and bringing them in to play one game and then letting them go and never signing them. And in fact, once in 1941, he had a pitcher named Tom Farrick, and the season went into 3 weeks before he got around to signing Farrick, and nothing happened. The only possible fine was if the player did not eventually sign, any games he was in would be forfeited. So, no box scores in any newspaper anywhere in the world ever show Elmer Valo as a pinch hitter or a pinch runner for him on that day. Chubby Dean, a pitcher and a part-time outfielder, entered the game as a pinch hitter for the starting pitcher in the third inning and stayed and pitched the rest of the game. Oddly enough, all of the box scores show the Washington pitcher Joe Haynes giving up only 2 walks. Al Brancato and Bob Johnson. But according to Retro Sheet, Haynes gave up three walks. And to balance the box score, the third walk had to go to the number nine hitter, who was Chubby Dean, or Albert Bauer. No play-by-play account of the game has ever been found. It was a meaningless game, but there were sixth and seventh place teams. They weren't going anywhere. Piecing together the bits from the brief game stories I found, I reconstructed the last three innings. The A's scored two in the seventh. Dick Siebert, batting fifth, made the last out in the inning. Sam Chapman, batting sixth, led off the eighth with a home run. That meant that the pitcher, Chubby Dean, had to bat in the eighth inning. But Chubby Dean pitched the ninth inning, so nobody had pinch hit for him, and it would have been pretty tough for an official scorer to conceal the fact that somebody else pitched the ninth inning. In that ninth inning, Frank Hayes hit a triple with two outs and nobody on. And he was singled in, he scored, and then Sam Chapman made the last out. So, did Elmer Battle really pinch hit for somebody in a walk? If so, for whom? If not, why was he still telling the story 36 years later? It's likely that the story of an obscure pinch hitting appearance by an unknown rookie in a meaningless game wasn't really a story until 21 years later, when Valo became a three-decade player. Now, there might be something to hook a story onto. Did Red Smith then create it? Tom Hufford of Sabre told me just this morning that he once met Elmer Ballo when Ballo was a scout, and he asked him about the 1939 story, and Ballo said, "Oh, let's not go into that. That's water over the dam. That's a long time ago." When I began my research on what had started out as a 350-page biography of Connie Mack, my first priority was to talk to as many of the people who had played for him as I could find while they were still around. And in my haste, my preparation for those interviews was clearly not what it should have been. I was unaware of the Red Smith column of 1975 or the letter he had written 3 years previous. But I remembered reading the Ballo 1939 story somewhere. Maybe I thought in Fred Leib's biography, written in 1945, of Connie Mack. So, I hoped to get the true story when I went to see Elmer Ballo at his home in Palmerton on January 29th, 1988. We spent a very pleasant 3 hours together as he talked about his youth, his long baseball career, while my primitive tape recorder reeled on. When he talked about his rookie year 1939 at Federalsburg, here's the way the conversation went. Ballo: "I was fortunate. I was picked toward the end of the major league season. He brought me up temporarily just to be there, and he paid me. Me. At the end of the 39 season, you were sitting on the bench in Philadelphia?" Ballo: "I sat on the bench. That's right." Me: "You never got into any games?" Ballo: "Well, no. I got into some semi-pro games. I was in a position, but I can't talk about it." "I won't talk about it. In other words, I can talk about it, but I won't." Me: "That's the story where you got into a game?" Ballo: "I don't want to talk about it. You know, it's water over the dam." Me. Yeah, I was going to ask you about it. I think I saw it in Fred Leib's biography of Connie Mack. Silence. We went on to other matters. About an hour later, I ventured to return to the subject. Me. I'm not sure where I read about the 1939 incident that you don't want to talk about. It may be in Fred Leib's book. If I call you sometime and read you what's in the book where I read it, would you tell me if it's true or not? He paused for several seconds, then said, well, I could mention the fact that, long pause, if so many guys call me on that, let's just leave it go, just to let well enough alone. That's what I've been telling everybody else. I can't make one exception then. I'm sorry about that. Me. Are you aware of what's in the book? Vallow. Probably. I know what it says. Probably it said something about Red Smith. That's all I'll admit to. Me. Yeah, I think it does. Supposedly the book that Lee wrote was based on a great, to a great extent, on conversations with Connie Mack. Vallow, what you can do is call me if you like, and then see what he says, and then I'll just say, leave well enough alone, or, okay? Me, fair enough. I discovered when I got home it was not in Lee's book, and I did not call him again. And I didn't learn about the letter or the 1975 column by Smith until after Vallow's death. 10 years after I had seen him. I was left wondering if Vallow had so openly told the story, as Smith wrote, why was he so evasive about it in the years that followed? Why hesitate to confirm it 50 years later? And if it didn't happen, maybe Vallow had gone along with it for years because it was good, harmless storytelling, and he was uncomfortable with denying it and tainting Red Smith's reputation, making him out to be a liar or at least somebody who made stuff up. So, was Elmer Vallow a four decades player? I left the question hanging as I plowed on through the years on the Connie Mack book. In recent months, I came upon the story as I was reworking on volume 3, and I came to this episode again. And it bothered me that it was still unresolved. How could I find out if Fred Smith was even an official scorer? Or if he was the official scorer that day? Did anybody have those records? I tried Major League Baseball, the Hall of Fame, the Baseball Writers Association, the Elias Statistical Bureau, the Sporting News, nothing. Then, thanks to research by Phil Wood, I learned that Smith had, in fact, been one of the Philadelphia official scorers in that year. But on that day, nobody knew. Until just a few weeks ago. Looking for something else, I came across a September item in another year that Red Smith had left the baseball beat to cover college football. Aha, says I. Maybe he had done the same thing back in 1939. So with the aid of Ed Morton of the local chapter, who is my research legs and eyes in Philadelphia, we found the answer. On Saturday, September 30th, while Elmer Vallow was on the bench in Shy Park, Red Smith was in the press box at the Villanova-Muhlenberg football game, covering Villanova's 23rd straight game without a loss, for the record. And so, like a lot of other good stories that never happened, you won't find this one in Volume 3, of my 350-page biography of Connie Mack.
a distinct memory in 1959, when I was 12, reading an article in some sports magazine about people who were about to become four-decade players. And I'm sure Ballo was one of the ones who was mentioned. But the thing I wanted to ask you was, and I apologize if you mentioned this, but I understand you did. The Turkin Thompson Baseball Encyclopedia came out in the mid-50s. The Mutual Baseball Almanac was an authoritative list of active players. Did they show Ballo playing for the Athletics in 1939?
No. and just to follow up on that,
yeah.
I could understand why it's possible that Smith came up with a story earlier than the 70s because of that being on the brink.
Yeah.
So the first mention of it, which I never found, could well have been earlier. Yeah.
Ballo played from 1940 to 1961.
Yes.
So then technically he was a four-decade player, right?
If I was writing a technical biography of Connie Knight, the story would be in there.
All right, if there's no more questions.
Okay, thank you very much.